Hello, good morning, and welcome. Yes, I'm live. This the half hour with Kevin Miller will be in the at the back end of today's program. Yes, once in a while I have to be somewhere at 10 o'clock, and so this works out conveniently to flip-flop and be live the same amount of time. Although I know it completely throws off everybody's schedule. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. You know, Kevin and I talked about the beginnings, if you will, of the bank fallout last week. And I'm sure we'll talk about it again on Tuesday. It was very chaotic this week, of course. Markets were very disrupted with any type of banking crisis. But what is interesting about this week is that markets were up. They were up. And it's not like the market's been up recently. It's been down. February was a down month. Beginning of March was a down time. January was up, and we're up a little bit year to date. But I find that interesting. And the most risky areas of the market were up the most. And the reason why, of course, is that the Federal Reserve is less likely to raise interest rates aggressively, and so those more risky parts of the market are going to do better because the discount of earnings way off in the future and blah, blah, blah. But it's still, it's kind of a head scratcher, right? I mean, if this is a financial meltdown, what does that mean? It can't be good for anybody. It's got to be worse, including the pretty much certain now we're going to have a recession or such slow growth that nothing good can really come from the economy. Isn't that the most expensive stocks are having the toughest time? And it brings you this kind of, why do we have to explain everything all the time? Well, we kind of do, because we want to try to understand a couple of things. One, there sometimes is no real explanation, because you can take whatever explanation and wrap it into whatever your belief is or your belief system. You know, ESG is good. It's going to save the world. If that's your belief, then you go out and you do ESG portfolios and you try to make money on the backs of investors. Even if it doesn't, you'll find data to show that you're right. We'll make explanations that, well, the market went up this week, and especially the risky sectors, not because we're almost certain we're going to have a recession, but because we're going to have a recession, the Fed won't raise interest rates anymore, and so those super high PE ratios or those zero PE, meaning they're not making any money, will make sense. Even though the recession means that these companies are less likely to be able to find loans that they need because they're really just getting started. We make up reasons all the time. Instead, sometimes it just doesn't have to have a reason. You know, and when we play the reason game, like, oh, well, that makes sense, all we're really doing is saying, oh, I wish I would have known that before, because then I would have made a lot of money this week. You see, we can't know those things. We can't know what's going to happen to slow the Fed down. We don't know what's going to break, because something's going to break when you raise interest rates after years. Number one, in an inflationary environment. Because that means stuff is already broken, right? It's kind of, it's pretty tenuous out there, right? We got problems. And when you raise interest rates from zero, the fastest in history, and then stand back and wonder why something broke. Oh, wow, God, so weird. And after throwing trillions of dollars at the economy, in the name of green energy and all this stuff, we get surprised that the regulators in San Francisco, the most woke big city in the world, and clearly, therefore, the most woke federal bank regulators in the world, might think it was a grand idea that instead of having actual bankers on your board, they would check all the correct boxes. And with trillions of dollars coming after every green energy idea in the whole wide world called the infrastructure bill, why wouldn't they let their pals in Silicon Valley borrow money that they couldn't get anywhere else for any reason under the sun? Because they have non-profitable ideas. No business could operate that way. But they did. So the Federal Reserve doesn't really count on that kind of thing breaking because they're really not paying attention. The people within the Federal Reserve aren't paying attention because Silicon Valley Bank, come on. These are nice people. They're going to save the planet. Super great people. And think about all the money coming out of the taxpayers in flyover country. That's awesome. JoJo sent it all to us. We don't have to make any money. And we can go to cocktail parties and talk about green energy and cool stuff. And how on our board, we've got the LGBTQAI plus community fully represented. That's what we got. Oh, well, here's another couple million dollars. Good boy. Good boy. What could go wrong? What could go wrong? And it's not alone. This is going to play out over a long period of time. Now you're going to watch Washington, D.C. Obviously, they already have. I think JoJo's first speech last week was, it was Trump's fault. Yep, it was Trump's fault. Really. And Barney Frank's bank was behind a lot of the lobbying. Yes, the far left wing Barney Frank. Trump's fault. Don't really look. It's not ESG policy. No. It's not the climate change bill with the $1 trillion that we just gushed into the economy. No, it's not that. It is all of the above. We can't overregulate, or we wind up with national banks that really are too big to fail. And there's only four of them. Who do you think lends to small business? Is it J.P. Morgan? Who did the development down the road? Was that the credit union? Mountain West? Key Bank? U.S. Bank? Another regional? Another community bank? Bank of the West? Washington Federal? It was J.P. Morgan. Yeah, that's right. J.P. Morgan lent to that small business down the road? No. Mm-mm. That's who does. We've got to be protected. Not nationalized. Nobody thinks so except Elizabeth Warren, and she's dumb as a post. It's what makes us different. One of the many things that makes us different, but it's a huge thing. It's an important thing. It's a very important thing. And we need to let them fail sometimes. And we need to let people lose money sometimes. Do I mean grandma's deposit money? Of course I don't mean that. But when billionaires put money into Silicon Valley, First Republic, whatever, Key Bank, whatever bank, and get extra interest for that. And there's bad management. And we don't let it fail? Incredible. We have to let him fail. We have to. And we'll talk some more about it today, but you know, you're going to hear it batting it around for weeks and weeks and weeks. We have to be careful as a nation what we do here. But you're just going to hear a lot of noise from both sides. We got to do this. We got to do that. And I understand politicians have to get up there in front of the camera, puff out their chest, and pretend to really care a lot about you and how mad they are. I'm so angry. We got to go get those bank executives, said Joe Biden. Congress needs to give me more power to go get them. Oh, how about quit promising money for stupid stuff? How about quit promoting that it's grand to have a diverse and really stupid cabinet of incompetent people in all sectors? But hey, the boxes got checked. Good. Why is that okay for you, a great idea for you, and not a great idea for Silicon Valley Bank? Why? Why? But we have to puff out our chest. See, you caused this. You caused this. Free money, everybody. It doesn't matter if it works. Here's free money from the taxpayers. And then, well, real quick, one other thing. Do you really think that this was a bank in Texas funding oil projects that they would have bailed out the billionaire depositors? Would there have been a single deposit over $250,000? Instantly guaranteed? If you do, there's a bridge in Brooklyn, blah, blah, blah. This whole thing stinks. This whole wokeness thing, maybe it peaked. Maybe that's the benefit of this. I don't know. Maybe ESG is finally blowing up as a really bad idea. Performance hasn't worked. It doesn't solve a thing. People on the left are calling it dumb. Really, the leftists are. So it's really, maybe it's, this is good. Maybe what the Federal Reserve did was actually, as raising rates until something breaks, what they broke, maybe they broke stupid. Maybe they did. Maybe this is a wake-up call. I don't know. Just thinking. But what it is not, and the markets tell you this clearly, it is not systemic. Not at all. And I can hear people, what about Credit Suisse? And what about, Credit Suisse has got its own issues. Credit Suisse is the lead bank on every bad project that's I've ever seen. They really are. I mean, name a golf course that's now gone back to the desert. Yep, they were the lead lender on it. Yep, in 2008 and then later on. Unbelievable. Unbelievable bad management there. Just, I mean, truly remarkable. Truly remarkable. I don't think it was done because they were woke. I don't think so. I don't think that's what happened there. At any rate, it's not systemic. That's why the markets were so strong. It's not. Go out and destroy those things that maybe are of concern. Go out and get them. But you know what? The general market did really well, working its way through it. All right, we're going to be back to basics this Saturday as well. I promise Louis the Loser. We're going to talk about Louis the Loser. I have to let you know about a Zoom meeting we did yesterday. And thanks to the office, particularly Jamie, for getting that up and going fast. We got that out and on our YouTube channel, Petso Financial. It's about 40 minutes long. I wanted to offer it out because we had such strong feedback positive feedback about it. We went through some of the charts and talked about the markets and what's going on right now. If you're worried about it, anything, or you just want some education, give it a look. Give it 5 minutes, see what you like. And I'd like to hear back from you. But that's out there at YouTube, Petso Financial. And our number here is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. If you prefer email. You know, one of the things we talked about in the Zoom was, why not just buy treasuries, right? You know, go home. And I've been thinking about that this week a lot. Looking at some, if you will, some data and different times. And, you know, why can't we just get, you know, 5% right now? It's not terrible. It was so bad before, like at zero, you know, it seems like a lot to get five. But it's like, markets work. That was half. And we think about the timing of this, and it brings me to Louis the Loser. It doesn't really matter. Like, for example, if you're accumulating, when you buy, well, I'm going to wait until the market is really, really good. Okay, well, you don't think like that, but that's what people do. They buy when they're comfortable. They sell when they're not. When are you comfortable? When things are good. I get my statement. I like it. And you're not comfortable when? When markets are down. We know that. And nobody sits down and goes, yeah, so what I want to do is I want to buy high, sell low. No, we don't say that. We just kind of sort of do that. I get it. It's called emotions. We got to control ourselves. And one of the great examples of this is goes all the way back. I mean, I've talked about Louis the Loser from before this last 20-year period that I'm going to tell you about right now. It's one of the things that American Funds has had around for years, okay? And I'm not going to tell you what fund and all that stuff because it doesn't really matter. It's not about this fund. It's about timing the market. And the fact that it's time, not timing, that matters. It matters when or how long, excuse me, you keep it and leave it alone, not when you buy. And obviously, it's the same thing when you're selling. It's just a good thing to remember. So if you started buying, say, $10,000 a year, 20 years ago, and here's the thing, in hindsight, we're going to do what you can't ever do. And you can't. You couldn't even get it right on one year, right? And that is to buy on the very worst day, the highest price of the year, right? The worst day, highest price of the year. And, or, on the other hand, let's say you bought on the best day of the year. You know, like exactly 5 days after the market crashed in 1987, right? Right? Exactly 10 days after the towers went down in 2001. That kind of impossible thing. The exact low price of the year. And you do that, and you do that for 20 years. You just keep buying $10,000. Finally, you've put in $20,000. And you know, if you bought at the absolute high every single year, you averaged 8.3%. 8.3. You got just over 10 if you bought at the absolute low. You got a little more, but not relevant amount. You see, in the long run, you can't lose, no matter how bad you are. And you can't be that impossibly good either. We spend so much time grinding on whether the market's up or down or what's going to happen. And all of the news doesn't help us do that. I talked about that in the Zoom call as well. I mean, once again, that's available to everybody out there if you want to go to YouTube and see it. There's some interesting charts on there, too. Fascinating stuff that talks about how much money you lose if you miss 5 days over 20 years. Just 5 days. You miss 20 days, you miss everything. This is unbelievable how easy it is to be emotional about everything and fearful. And we leave. Always at the wrong times. Always. If I were to tell you a week ago that there would be more banks failing come Monday morning, but I'm going to give you a chance to get out of the highest risk stocks. Just pretend it's Friday before the close. And I'm going to tell you, I promise, I've read the papers, Into the Future. It's Back to the Future. I've read it. There's going to be more bank issues come Monday. Not just Silicon Valley Bank. It's spreading out. If I told you that, told you about all the wonderful global events that are going on now, and talk about how the President of the United States got up and pointed his finger at Trump, said it's his fault, and then walked over and had a little trouble finding the doorknob, wouldn't answer any questions. Wouldn't answer any questions. The Treasury Secretary looks like she's going to take a nap any moment now. Is going to bring calm to the markets or not. So if you want to get out, go ahead on Friday. Of course, we all would have raised our hands and said, that's awesome. Let's do that. So how did markets react? Well, the highest beta, highest risk stocks soared this week. They did great. You see, markets don't do what we're sure the news is going to do to it. Because it's really hard. Really, really hard to predict what human beings are going to do. As in impossible. I shared this as well. To always remember as you grind this weekend through some more news and more commentary, and you, after a week of it, and you're just listening, and CNBC is so happy to have a crisis because nobody watches without one. They know. Stocks are up. Who cares? Stocks are down. I better watch. Do you know that Wall Street commentators are wrong more than a coin flip? Now, you may think that's just kind of funny, and it kind of is, but it's also super serious to think that we're spending time and emotion, file space in our brain, on something that is worse than a coin flip. Now, as an illustration, let me just say, I am going to watch CNBC and listen to people comment about what's going to happen. Or, for a long period of time. Or I'm going to walk in and I'm going to say, I wonder what I do with my portfolio today. Buy or sell. Grab a coin, flip it, and I'm going to be right more. Do you think anybody would govern their investments by a coin flip? I don't. I'm rational, but rational means I'm going to spend time getting misinformation and make more bad decisions than flipping a coin. Now, what's rational about that? What is smart about that? That had to be one of my favorite charts from the Zoom meeting was that one. I just absolutely shake my head. It's just unbelievable. And when you really think about that, I mean really think about it, it really centers your thought process correctly. Why am I doing this? Why am I listening? What am I hoping to gather from this? Am I really just listening to the people I already agree with? Is that what I'm listening for? Confirmation of what I'm doing is right? What a waste of time. Emotion, energy, and it pushes us in the wrong directions. It doesn't make sense. It's really, truly irrational to sit in front of the news. It really is. It makes no sense at all. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetzelFinancial.net. Let's ring him up. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. If you're just joining us now, we've been live, and our weekly recording with Kevin Miller is going to be at the back end because, yes, there are sometimes there's days that I have something to do at 10 o'clock that I need to do. So we've reversed everything today. And so give us a call. It's 580-5436, 580-KIDO, Dave at PetzelFinancial.net. Now, we've been talking about basics lately. Why? Because it helps center us and bring us back. It's like what we talked about on our Zoom meeting yesterday. And I keep going back to that because all those slides and all, they're fresh in my mind and the discussion and all that. Nobody can see into the future, but it doesn't really matter when you own stocks for the long term. The income on the S&P 500 has gone up 9% a year, three times the rate of inflation for 50 years. Even though prices, as we all know, occasionally go down and sometimes by a lot. I mean, like cut in half. The income keeps going higher. Through inflation, through wars, through everything. It just keeps going. It's bizarre. Through really bad bank decisions. All of that. It keeps working. So when we think about, should I just buy those treasury bonds? So I've been thinking about this. I've been on a lot of calls recently. A lot. I mean, a lot more than normal. Because you have to think when conditions change, you have to spend more time just thinking. Not doing. Just think. Don't overreact. Think. Should I be adding more bonds? The answer is yes, of course. More treasuries? No. I'll come back to that. Should we be looking in the credit markets when this kind of calms down? Uh-huh. Absolutely. Huge opportunities there. Monster opportunities. To very likely get market returns without market risk, meaning yes, 10% plus in credit instruments. Weird. These types of things always bring opportunities, and the way you have to think about it is, I'm not going to get the low. That's not for me. That day of the low ain't for me. It's for nobody. Only way to catch that is when things are really bad, you buy a little bit every single day, and then one day, you'll catch the low. And you'll be a hero on that little speck of money. Or you don't worry about it. When bargains smack you in the face, you know, I'm not going to get the low, but okay. I'm getting an amazing deal. And whether it's 3 months from now, 3 years from now, you'll be super happy you did it. Even if in the meantime, oh, could have waited a day. I should have waited a week, a month. We don't know. You can't know. And that's one of the things that makes it so hard, because we get into this and we think we're really smart and we're going to figure out it's really now, it's really such a bargain. It's overshot. And it probably has. But it's going to overshoot even more tomorrow. And that's okay. Because what you can't do is miss it. You can't miss it. Because you don't get that many opportunities. I don't mean in a lifetime. We get lots of opportunities. But to find amazing bargains in areas that can either do supersized returns or have very low risk in any normal environment, any longer-term environment, but offer oversized returns. Those don't come around a lot. They just don't. At every few years, especially when there's a disruption like this, the Fed screwed up. The leftist economists bagged us. It's okay to pump money into the economy. It won't inflate. We got this. You can run zero interest rates, spend trillions of dollars we don't have. It'll all be okay. It's going to be grand. And we can remake the whole world. And then it just breaks. And then we also have, because of that, any leverage in the system, and leverage can also be defined as stupid stuff. We levered wokeness in Silicon Valley. We threw gobs of money at it. Silicon Valley Bank was run by morons who were more concerned about being woke, giving bad loans to bad businesses, and having bad advisors on their board, non-bankers, than they were about running a bank. That's what happens when we get carried away. That's broke. And when we come back into this, we have a circumstance where now we have some opportunities as well. Because we're not usually this stupid. But it does happen. And bad decisions were made, bad policies. So we're having crazy volatility in bonds, like never before, actually. Really, literally never before have we had a week like this in history. Credit spreads blow out, all these things. There's a lot of terms. I'm not trying to get in the weeds here. Crazy volatility in bonds. Will it settle down next week? I don't know. But it will someday. But when there's crazy volatility, it means also there's crazy opportunity. And here's this other point that I've been really pondering, okay? And it's an important one to remember. Here's the crazy, huge period of time that people remember, okay? When interest rates ballooned to 21.5% prime lending rate in 1980. That means short-term treasuries were like at 18%. Money markets were at 16%. 16% for daily liquid risk-free cash. Why wouldn't I do that? And there's no stinking way I'm going to buy a 30-year government bond at 16% or 14 6 months later. No way I'm going to do that, because that is tied up. Not really. You can sell them any day, but it is tied up for 30 years. I want the daily liquid cash. This is an important one. I've been really thinking about this. The 10-year bond, that was the most ridiculously inverted yield curve, right? But we are there now. meaning the shortest paper. Money markets yield more than 30-year bonds by a lot. 10-year bonds have never underperformed treasuries when the yield curve is inverted. Never once. Never once. So you say, why would I buy a 10-year treasury at 3 point, I think cratered like down to 3.3 or so this week, when I can get over 4 in treasury, in you know, T-bills, just short-term treasuries? Why would I do that? Because always over the next 10 years, you've outperformed it 100% of the time when the yield curve is inverted. Now, that's interesting. That's investable information. It doesn't mean it won't happen this time. It means we have a pretty high odds that when you are investing on the longer end of the yield curve, you're okay right now. Interesting thought. All right, we got to take our final break. 580-5436, 580-KIDO is our number. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and once again, thank you for joining us. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO, and yes, we reversed today's usual program, which means Kevin Miller in my segment from last Tuesday will be at the end of today's program, okay? So we'll be here. I'll be here through the break here in the next couple minutes, and then we'll have an opening 25 minutes or so before that plays. So a little bit of a reversal today. Kind of like the market, right? It's totally upside down. Nobody would have predicted that if there was a concern about bank failures continuing this week, in fact, not just a concern, some banks failed. So we've now had the second and the third largest in our country have failed. And people start asking questions about FDIC. Even companies like Schwab went down. By the way, now that's an opportunity. If you've been wanting to buy into the brokerages, wow. Because guess what? They custody assets. They may have some banking, but very, very little. Very little. But they're all the stocks got hit. And so when we think about times like this, when we'll talk about interest rates being inverted. Now, what is an inverted yield curve? It means short-term rates are higher than long-term. That's all, because it's very abnormal. If I'm going out and lending you money for 10 years, I'm going to want more than if I'm lending money to you for 10 days under almost every normal circumstance, but not right now, because it's not normal. It's called inverted. And as I pointed out, that brings amazing opportunities in some areas. Inflation brings opportunities. How? In credit markets, all of these things, bank concerns blow up. Things like preferred stock that are kind of sort of like bonds. The bond markets blow out their credit spreads because people always overreact. They don't want to be the ones holding the paper when the company goes bankrupt. I get it. I don't want to either. It brings opportunities. That's why. We have to be looking at these opportunities because they can create environments that didn't exist prior. In other words, if we have more margin for safety than we did before because we're paying a lower price, that's a better environment. Interest rates are higher than they were a year ago by a lot. Things change. And that's what we want to be talking about and adjusting to. All right, you hear the music. We are going to be out of here for a break here for Fox News, and we'll be right back after that. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. And as I like to tell you all the time, these are my opinions and my opinions only. We're not here to tell you what to buy, and sell. We are not. That is anti-investing. It's terrible. Don't have any idea why people do that. None. Of course, I don't understand why people watch, Housewives of,
Boston or whatever either. But anyway, sorry. If you watched that, I'm sorry. Really, really sorry. I didn't mean to be offensive. The reason that we don't do that is it doesn't work. And I want you to understand this statistic. And I'm just going to keep talking about it, okay? My favorite chart from the Zoom meeting we did yesterday, which, by the way, is out there on YouTube, Petso Financial Channel YouTube. Petso Financial YouTube. It's out there. Great charts, stuff. We have great feedback from it. Just did it yesterday. And thanks, Jamie, for getting that out there so fast. I really appreciate that. I know you actually did that Friday afternoon before we let you go. So it was just awesome. Good work. Favorite stat. 48% of the market commentators, the experts on CNBC, 48% of the time they got the market direction right. Less than a coin flip. Is the market going to go up? Yes. Wrong. Why are these people paid? Why do we listen? Why do we spend one bit of our brain time on this? It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. And then it's all day long, and we're going to get on, and we're going to pretend that somebody's going to go in a lightning round where they should buy, buy, buy. This is investing? It's insane you would spend this much time doing this. Anytime. At all. Insane. It's literally counterproductive. You will make less money watching CNBC than if you never even heard of what CNBC was. Are they intentionally misleading? No. Nobody knows the future. Nobody. But they find the smartest people. No, they don't. They find people who can talk good. Doesn't mean they know what the future is. They don't. They don't. They find people not even that talk good, not even that are right, but maybe they are the head spokesperson for whoever buys commercial time. That's a fact. That's how you get on CNBC. You don't get on because, wow, there's this really smart dude in Colorado you should talk to. No, you get on because you're an advertiser and the really smart dude that works for you can be on. That's why. Happens all the time. Happens all the time. By the way, if you have any comments, questions, you better go now, because we flip-flop today, if you're just tuning in, and my segment with Kevin is going to be starting in the last half today, because I've got to be somewhere at 10 o'clock, okay? So there you go. 580-KIDO. All right, so 48% of the time, less than a coin flip. That's pretty remarkable. I find that interesting. Probably more than you do, and wondering why I'm dwelling on this. Am I just making fun of CNBC? Not at all. Not at all. I'm actually quite pondering how it's possible to be wrong more than a coin flip. But we are. And I think that's important in our lives in all ways that we think about this. We have to think about it. We're wrong more than a coin flip is. And nobody thinks they should prepare their day by flipping a coin and deciding what direction they're going to go. Doesn't seem really smart. So how many things in our life, besides the stock market, are we wrong about more than a coin flip? It's pretty interesting. Pretty important. So what things we know in the market, we think about. I think about all the time. If you knew X, Y, and Z was going to happen, would you own stocks? And the answer is almost always no. Of course I wouldn't. But the market went up over that 10-year period when all that stuff happened. It went up a lot. See, we don't always react the way we think the news would be, and times are never perfect. We're only a day or two away from solving today's problems and moving into the unsolved next day's problems. And that's life. Oh, and we never attach any kind of emotion at all to history. The only way we get that is we'll watch a World War I movie or something like that, right? And boy meets girl, and they're all in love, and then the boy dies, and it's tragic, and we're crying, and it's so sad, and it is. But if we're just sitting there like watching a documentary, nobody's crying, and nobody's going, oh my gosh, in a real way, a real feeling way of how horrible that war was. We can only have emotion through a movie. We can all certainly talk about, boy, it was really terrible. You know, can you believe it? They went back and forth like a couple hundred yards for years, and millions of people died. It was just insane. Yeah, it was. But that isn't the emotion of right now people worried about, is their bank going to fail? Is it? I don't know. Should I have more than $250? I better not. I, what am I going to do? Put it under the mattress. Is my account at Charles Schwab safe? I don't know. What about UBS? I don't know. I don't know. And people are really worried about those things. And it's fair. It's fair to have questions. I'm not panicking. I'm not making fun. That's real emotion. It's right now. It's the only emotion we can have. And so we do this. We take today's emotion and we amp it up. This will never get better. Don't you realize? And then we get in a world today that's frenzied with cell phones and apps, and we spend time in front of the computer instead of time with people. A newspaper is an irrelevant thing to start fires now. And they've become so irrelevant because, well, they're just crappy. Because they're not profitable, and they're terrible, and they're just terrible. They just don't have anything in them anymore. So we get our news online instantly. And the news is nothing more than a historic report of what happened, not what's happening or going to happen. It's always like that, isn't it? It's always like that, but it's amped up now. And so we don't have time to stop and, like, read the paper. Because the paper with my cup of coffee and toast in the morning is just something you could digest. Not freak out about. Not have 24/7 loop of hell. Of how bad everything is. It's just, can you believe those morons on the other side of the aisle? I know. It is so amped up. I know my wife and I'll be like, we're watching a news, some news commentary or something, and it's like, you know, like we're watching Tucker or something, and it's like, God, that makes me angry. It's like, I know, I gotta stop watching. No more. And yet I talk to people and they're like, well, I watch this at night, and then I watch the next hour and the next hour, next hour. I'm like, oh my gosh, how do you get out of bed? Maybe you just ought to go to bed and skip it. I mean, it's so, we get mad. We get emotional about the injustice, and it's real, and we should be in touch with some of that. But we don't want to do that with our stocks, for sure. And think we know stuff when we don't. The economy is going to go into recession, so what's the market going to do? Well, it's going to go down. We all know that, do we? Is that what happens? Actually not. We'll have to talk about that another time. Why? Because we got a phone call, and we got to grab it before we're done with today's live program. Lee Joe, go ahead, please. Hello?
Richard, I have a question for you.
You got it.
How many dollars can you print before the dollar is worth zero?
I don't know. We don't know.
Have we passed that?
No, nope, because the dollar's not worth zero, so no, we haven't passed it yet. But it's a fair question, Lee Joe. Nobody knows the answer, though, okay? It's a fair question, but we don't know the answer. People have been playing around with that when they talk about Japan, for example, right? Well, it's as a percentage of their GDP. Well, that's Japan didn't fail, not yet. And their GDP as a percentage, their debt to GDP is way over 100% for a long time. It's for decades. They just print money, and their economy is absolutely terrible. It just, they dig holes and then fill them up again. You know, people go, oh, wow, you ought to see their train system. You ought to see this. You're right. All they did, print money, built stuff they don't need, and to try to employ people because their economy is failing. And if you just keep doing that. Yeah.
So what happened in Greece when their debt went insane and they were printing money?
Oh, well, Greece did. They failed, and of course they had to basically flush the old currency and start over. Same with Brazil. Mexico continues to deflate their currency. It hasn't been zero, but it just keeps going down, 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 down forever, certainly relative to everything else. So it is, obviously it's a problem within any country, but relatively speaking, the United States is the strongest bad actor in the world. It's not a great place to be, but it's better than being worse than us at it. It's better than being Europe. It's way better than being China. It's way better than being Japan. It's way better, and that's why we have the reserve currency. And we have a lot of it around the world, and that helps, too, with liquidity and everything else. That's one of the reasons we can go probably longer, more debt than anybody else. But debt to GDP is the one they always bring up, Lee Joe. That's the one they always bring up.
That's my problem, too. There's nothing that stops us from joining the pack and saying, well, this is no longer a currency that we take, and now you're going to have to do our new e-currency, and that's what the new denomination is. And everything else you had got bought out for 50 cents.
Yeah. And, Lee Joe, it's an enormous problem. I think it is. And until we shift this to a question of moral, is it moral for us to spend our children and our grandchildren's future? Is that a moral high ground you want to stand on? If we can't have that discussion and don't have that discussion in that way, I don't think you change hearts and minds. I think we have to be phrasing it that way because that's exactly what it is. Regardless of whether you think it's a pending doom or not, you think it's okay to keep spending money. The future generations have to pay that back with either higher taxes or lower growth, less opportunity.
Or the currency defaults, and we go to a place of horridness.
I agree. I'm saying even if you don't think that's going to happen, that's where I think you win the hearts and minds of people that don't want to believe that that could ever happen. Okay? Then you have to win them over by saying, is this right to harm your children and your grandchildren in this way? That's where I think it is. Lee Joe, I got to go. Thank you.
Thanks.
Tommy, you're on.
Yes. Hi, Dave.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. Thank you.
My question is, what is the difference as far as security and safety between a bank and a credit union?
They're the same. If your deposit's under 250, it's guaranteed.
Okay. And the likeliness of either one to fail, is there a likeliness more than one to the other?
Fair question.
Even if your deposits are secure, I'm just saying, at one point I changed, this was just a while back, mm-hmm. I changed from U.S. Bank to a credit union.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been listening to different things, and they were saying, oh, you need to get out of the big banks. So that's what I did. And then recently, since the Semi Valley thing, everybody's saying, well, you need to go into a big bank. And I'm thinking, but they're also, I guess they're comparing that to small regional banks, but I'm just wanting to know the difference of a regional bank compared to a credit union.
Okay. Let's go this way, because you're quite right. They're saying the safest banks are the biggest banks. And that's true. That is true, because they're too big to fail. They really have to be backed up in any way, shape, or form. The whole system collapses if we lose J.P. Morgan, for example. The whole system's gone. Okay? So they're too big to fail. Can we lose KeyBank? Yep. Would that be the end of the world? Nope. It could cause bank contagion that would be a problem, which is why they jumped into Silicon Valley. But let's not go there, because I'm going to get really angry politically that they never would have done this in Texas, and all those other things are absolutely true. And these were morons, and they were it's irresponsible they weren't monitored by the people in San Francisco called the Federal Reserve Bank. Okay? totally irresponsible. But at the same time, this can be afforded on one-off to the system. Big banks can't. The bigger the bank, the more systemic problems there are, and then we can't have that. So we bring it on down to the local community banks, which we have to have, or we lose small business lending. That's J.P. Morgan doesn't lend to any business around town. That's all done by the credit unions and the regional banks. That's who does it. So community banks are very, very important to our system, to the system of small business hiring people. So we need to keep that. And I think it's a really important focus as we talk about regulations here. But I don't want to say that credit unions aren't safe. They're very deposit-driven, which means they you can easily have a run on the bank. There's no question about that. But they're really, they tend to be very small, like car loans and, you know, short-duration loans. They don't go out and buy a bunch of 30-year government bonds and get creative with their balance sheet like Silicon Valley Bank did. They don't go out and play with crypto. And so I'm not saying that they're all safe. They're not. They go under two. But I think you can feel comfortable as long as you're under the $250,000 that you don't have to go try to figure out if the balance sheet is good, sit down and talk to management at their annual meetings and find out if they're stupid as a rock. Or they're just pretending to be woke and the banking isn't actually an important enterprise at all. There's lots of different things that you would have to do if you had more than $250,000. And if you don't, I just wouldn't worry about it. Your deposits are guaranteed, and I think credit unions are just as safe. And it's a very fair question in this world right now. Okay.
All right. Thank
Tommy,
you so
thank
much.
You. You have a great rest of the day. Thank you now.
You too. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. You know, this is real, okay? People are nervous about this and don't understand the financial system, and I totally get that, okay? Because it is one of the things we always have to bear in mind. Is my bank safe? Is my credit union safe? All those things. The answer is no. It's all on trust. So is our currency. So is everything in the world. There is no value in anything except what somebody else perceives it to have value. If the dollar is perceived as not having value, it doesn't. And it doesn't have a formula for that, for deciding when that happens. Neither does your bank have a magic formula. It is exactly like it's a Wonderful Life. It's exactly like that. If everybody went and asked for their money out of any bank, then it's closed. Because we operate on that fact, because you have to collect the deposits, and that's what they lend out long term. We can't get it all back at the same time. All right. Enjoy the next time here with Kevin Miller and I appreciate you joining us. We'll be back live next week. Have a great weekend.